Welcome back to Integrative Lyme Solutions with Dr. Karlfeldt. I am so excited about the show that we have ahead of us. We have some phenomenal information that could save lives. I am Dr. Michael Karlfeldt, and with me I have my co-host,
Tanya Hobo.
You're going to need to tune in to what's going on today. The information is jam-packed, so don't step away.
So excited. Let's go ahead and get this started. Well, hello, Tricia. Welcome to Integrative Lyme Solutions with Dr. Karlfeldt. We're so excited to have you. Yeah. You're welcome.
Yes, great to have you here. I'm excited to hear kind of all the amazing things that you've done and you've gone through.
The journey.
Yeah. You know, they're so similar to everybody's, but yet so different.
Yeah.
So it's exciting to listen to everyone's journey, especially when they have a happy ending. So
yeah,
I like happy endings a lot when it comes to Lyme.
Yes.
Because it's such a rough one.
It seems like there's not a lot of them. You know, there's a handful of them, but they're hard to find. So there's just so many struggling still with trying to find a diagnosis as one, you know, and then a treatment and a doctor willing to treat. So it's tough. And so I personally am super grateful for Dr. Karlfeldt because I was close to remission, but he's the one who kind of pushed me over the edge. So,
little extra nudge.
That little extra nudge I needed.
Yeah.
And you know, it's so true. Like some people lose hope right before that next little thing that's going to push them over that into the remission edge. And you just have to keep trying and you just try to encourage people, try the next thing. It just might be the thing, you know, and you don't know. So you have to try.
Right. And that's why these podcasts are so great because, you know, all of our guests are those who have conquered Lyme. So, you know, it just, for the listeners out there, it just, you know, might hit that one person just on the right day when they're just ready to throw all the towels in.
Yeah.
And then they hear somebody's story like yours, you know, that just gives them that, okay, I can do this. You know, if she went through this, I can definitely do it. You know, just to give them that boost of hope that they need. So we appreciate you being here.
Yeah, we do. And that's the thing. I mean, like you're mentioning, every journey is so different. So obviously it's not the same solution for, you know, one person for another person, but it's just to recognize options and just kind of give ideas of, you know, maybe I haven't tried this, or maybe, you know, she did this and that worked really well for her. And I haven't explored that. You know, maybe I should do that. And that's just to have options available when you're in a place of you know, a really tough time.
Yeah, I agree with you. And we have one of our kids has autism, and I started to look at it as autism, like it's a spectrum. That, like, when you meet an autistic person, you've met one autistic person. There's no two of them are the same.
Yeah.
There's just a spectrum of things that they have to handle that they all manifest differently. And I started to look at Lyme when I started to really research and look into things. I was like, this is like autism. It's like, there's no two the same.
Yeah. That's a good comparison. Yeah, you're right.
It is. Yeah. It is a spectrum disorder. Yeah, absolutely.
Because I mean, you take all the different kinds of Borrelia, then you take all the different co-infections, then you do permutations of all those things, and what do you have? You have a bazillion different combinations.
You put them all in a box and you shake it all up.
Yeah,
and that's how we feel.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, and then you pull out a paper and it's like, well, what do I have?
Yeah, exactly. Well, coming down to the stage. You
know? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're the winner.
Yeah, exactly. Price is right.
Yeah. but you're right though. I mean, diagnosis is an odyssey. Getting to diagnosis is really hard because.
And how did that work for you? I mean,
well, like everyone, I started in Western medicine. I went to my doctor feeling lousy and trying to find out why. And then they would say, oh, you have blood work like a rock star. You are so healthy. I'm like, but I'm sick, exactly. You know, like I'm so sick. And I finally got my husband to come and said, would you tell him I'm sick? And, you know, because I just couldn't seem to get through to them. I don't care what those numbers tell you. I'm not me. And I'm kind of an energizer bunny person. And my husband said, yeah, she's broken. Like, this is not my wife. This is not who she is. We have 8 kids.
Oh my gosh.
Right. Okay. So I'm an energizer bunny, right?
Yeah.
We have 3 biological and 5 adopted kids. The 5 adopted kids are all special needs kids. So I have things to do, places to go, people to see. I don't have time for this. Tell me what's wrong with me. I need to move on.
Yeah,
like anybody that tells me I'm attention seeking or trying to be sick or whatever, I don't have time for you.
Right.
I've got, you know what I mean? I don't have time for you. I got to get fixed because I don't have time for this.
Right. Well, that's incredible. You adopted 5. Needs kids. That's incredible.
Definitely a calling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So tell us. So when you first started all of this, what were your symptoms? How did it kind of come on suddenly, or just kind of take us through
that? The symptoms, initial symptoms for me were not bothersome. They were weird, but they weren't bothersome because they didn't stop me. So I didn't do anything about them. I started decades ago having, I would wake and I would burst out in a complete sweat, like running down my legs kind of sweat. And I would have these really odd feelings like prickles or raindrops on my cheeks or on my arms. In fact, I listened to one of your podcasts with Chrissy and I was so excited to hear her talk about the raindrops. I was like, yes, somebody had that thing.
That's me.
I hadn't heard anybody say it before. And I said, the other thing I said to my husband, I'm like, you know, honestly, if I was going to make up a disease, wouldn't I make up something I'd heard of before? I'm making up words to explain because I never heard or
that you can pronounce
it.
It's a spiral key.
Right. I actually had, I had some symptoms. I had to make up words because I didn't know how to describe it. I had this one symptom where my vision would fracture. That's what I would say to the doctor. And he goes, what do you mean? I said, well, it looks like I'm looking through a broken window or into a broken mirror. And he's like, I was like, yeah, I know, right?
Yeah.
I don't know what to do with that.
Yeah.
And honestly, they came down, they did all their little stuff and they decided that I had MS. And first time this diagnosis of MS, but I had that diagnosis for about a month before they said, no, it's not MS. We did a lumbar puncture, by the way. You don't want that done to you ever. It's awful.
Oh.
I mean, I went through so many awful invasive things. And there's just nobody would want that. But anyway, the lumbar puncture did not show a certain protein in the fluid that should be there if you have MS.
Okay.
So I had
MS for a month and then.
A month, right? And then and then they just said, you don't have MS. And I was like, okay, what do I have? And they were like, oh, we don't know, but go home, be happy you don't have MS. So I'm like, well, that's lovely. What do I have? And I wouldn't put it down. And so they sent me to the psych ward. I don't mean they admitted me, but they sent me to the psych guy for evaluation.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
It's
just because your blood work looks fine and they can't find anything. So it's got to be in your head because you know, if it was something real, they would have seen it in the blood work.
And of course you would look really, really sick.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And just because I wasn't myself and I was having these weird symptoms that nobody else knew about, that must be, she must be making it up and trying to get attention. Like, I don't have time to get attention. Right. I've got kids that need to get to therapies. I have kids that need to get to sports. I make 33 meals a day.
Wow.
Right. I don't have time for this.
Right,
so
right.
it was just crazy odd to me that they're like, all right, you got to go to the psychiatrist.
Yeah. So maybe
and you know what he did?
Maybe you're just stressed. Maybe you just needed a vacation.
And you know what? Honestly, they wanted to blame our family, our configuration of our family. But I said, no, this is what we're called to do. This is what, this is our purpose in life. This is great. This is who we are. It's not a hardship. Yes, it's stressful, but it's just our stress. It's not something that we don't want in our lives or something. Right. You know what I'm saying? It's not.
And it's not like you just got all the kids today, you know, or yesterday. No, when you got sick.
One at a time.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was one at a time, like everybody else.
So what happened? Did you eventually start getting like more symptoms that were debilitating, or did you kind of just lay low for a little bit?
So every time I'd get one of those weird symptoms and then the doctors would say they don't know what it is, Dave and I would throw it into this bucket we called, huh, that's weird. And we would just throw it in that bucket. Like, okay, we got raindrops on the cheeks, throw that in the bucket. We've got fractured vision, throw that in the bucket, whatever. And then I started to get racing heartbeats. And so I was diagnosed as SVT, supraventricular tachycardia. And then they started doing all these analyses on me, trying to figure out why I had supraventricular tachycardia. And I had it so bad. I was out snowshoeing with the dogs. We have three golden retrievers too. And I was out snowshoeing with them and everything up in front of me started to move. And I thought it looked like an earthquake.
Oh, wow.
And it was my heart moving my head.
Oh, are you serious?
Wow. Yes. Oh. Yeah. Wow. So I just stopped and I waited for a while for it to go away. And then, you know, the dogs
like,
just
well, that's
down
weird.
Throw that in the bucket of what, whatever. That's weird. Huh? Anyway, yes. So we come down after all these things, these expensive echoes and whatever they're doing, all these different cardiograms of various sorts. And they had an event monitor on me at one point. They had a 30-day monitor on me. I had skin peeling off because of those sticky things they had on me for a month. I mean, I had like cuts on me from these sticky things that were on me for a month. And they said, yeah, we can't figure it out. Great. Fantastic. So what are you telling me? And they said, well, basically, the insulation between the ventricle and the auricle is holding. So it doesn't, you don't go into AFib because of the SVT. So you're fine. I'm like, okay. So my heart starts racing and my head starts moving. What do I do? Well, what do you usually do? I was like, well, I usually wait till it passes. And they were like, that's what you do. Okay. That's what I do. Okay. So where does that go? Into the bucket of, huh, that's weird. I don't know. I mean, anybody else on the whole planet gets a racing heartbeat or chest pain, they're supposed to call 911, not Trish Campbell. No, she's gonna sit there and wait it out.
Yeah, exactly. Just wait it out. And
I did. I had this thing that they called it ice pick pain, where I'd get like a really hard, sharp pain, like in my heart, and then it'd be like that, and then it would just dissipate. I'd be like, okay, and so I just sort of wait it out, and it. Yeah. And like my husband will hear me make that noise and I go, you all right? And I'm like, I'll be fine in a minute. And then I am, I'm fine in a minute.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, that's weird. But they could not figure that out.
No.
So
off you go to the psychiatrist instead.
I know. Well, you know, he did try to put me on a bunch of medications and he figured out one thing that he could control was the fractured vision. He used this medicine that people that have aura with migraines. Now, I didn't have a headache. I just had fractured vision, mind you. But he was using the same medicine that they use with people that have a migraine aura, and it did help. So, you know, he did have his helpful parts.
Benefit, yeah. So it's like a silent migraine that he considered that you had.
Okay. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, kind of interesting, but yeah. But then it was interesting. I read this book by Dr. Neil Spector. Have you read his book? He was a doctor at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston. Not a heart doc, not a infectious disease guy. He was like an oncology research guy, and he got SVT, and he was a like a Boston marathoner and stuff. I mean, he was a fit guy and he got this heart problem and he couldn't solve this. And he knew all these people, right? So you're a doctor, you know, you all these different doctors, right? None of his friends that were in cardiology could help him. Nobody could figure it out. And finally his heart beat itself to death and he needed to get a transplant. Wow. So because he was a research guy and because he was a doctor, he had them save his heart. Oh. And he biopsied it.
Oh, wow.
And he found Borrelia.
Are you serious?
You know, serious. I think, do you remember the name of that book? I kind of think I heard this story.
Yeah, his name's Dr. Neil Spector. His book is called Gone in a Heartbeat. And I was so relieved when I read that because I was like, okay, that one can come out of the bucket of, huh, that's weird, right? Like yeah. I can yeah. take that out because now I understand. But I didn't understand until I had already been diagnosed with Lyme. And then I read that book. I'm like, seriously, that thing several years ago that I've been living with, that was Lyme too? Yeah. And then I started to think about everything I'd ever been through and wonder, huh, was all these things Lyme?
So yeah. you could start and empty that bucket with all that, huh, that's weird. And
yep.
Yeah. So, yep. So you already knew that you had Lyme when you read that book?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I did. Well, I had started to do my own research. Once I found out I had Lyme, I started to read and read and read and just, you know, I read Dr. Horwitz's book and I read this one book that I really liked. It said, "Don't kill my Lyme, just make me feel better." I loved that one
because I like the title.
Yeah, I did too. Just make me feel better because a lot of us, I mean, we can get to remission, but once it's in your heart, you can't get it out. Apart from divine intervention, right? I mean, there's once it's invaded deep enough, there's no antibiotics that are going to get at it or whatever. And so when it's in your, that's why it's so important when it's in your bloodstream, like the minute you get bit, you treat the bite. You don't wait and see how it manifests.
Right.
You treat the bite. And
so how did you end up getting diagnosed?
I actually went to, after all these Western people that weren't helpful, and I was going downhill. I was 14 hours a day. I like if I eat a small meal, it would take all the energy my body had. I had to go to sleep because my body was trying to digest this little meal and I just didn't have any more than that. It was just ridiculous. And thankfully by this point, well, the eight kids, when they were younger, they were 0 to 14. And then by the time I was really getting sick, the youngest was 18. So that was a good thing as far
that
as
helped, definitely
that was helpful. Right. What happened was I had had a lot of orthopedic surgeries over my life, which I look back and saw Lyme happening, but the second time I had my back fused, I could not get back on my game. And I didn't understand it because I had done this before. And I felt like, why can't I get back on the ball here? What is my problem? And I just had fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue, something fierce. And I had a lot of depersonalization issues. Like I would look at my own hand and it didn't seem like it was my hand. It was like not connected. Or I would walk and I would feel all of a sudden just like too high up or whatever. Like my own reference point of myself and the world was getting shifted. It was just bizarre. And we couldn't throw it into the bucket of, huh, that's weird, because I couldn't live with it. Like, huh, that's weird is fine if you can live with it. But if you can't live with something, you need to keep going until you find somebody that helps you. So I found this nurse because believe it or not, she went to get coffee at a Starbucks where I had a friend that was working at the Starbucks. And she was talking about whatever she was talking about. And my friend kind of interjected and said, I have a friend that's sick like that. And they can't quite figure out what's going on, whatever. She goes, you need to have her come see me. And she gave her a card.
Wow.
So yeah, I know it was very serendipitous. So I went to this nurse. I had to be driven. I couldn't drive anymore. I was just too sick. I would recline in the passenger seat as I was being driven wherever, because I was just so, I was just done. You know, I was like, Dave, I don't know how much longer before I just plain stop. But so anyway, she used a computer and did energy work that figured out what kind, you know, how like everything has an energy field around it. And like everything. And so she used this computer to analyze things that were coming off of me and what was happening. And she definitely found Lyme, and she found a bunch of co-infections, and she started to treat me. And it was so helpful.
So
was it one of those that you kind of had your hands on a device and
there were actually like two metal, or I think they were copper actually,
like rods,
cylinders. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then there was another thing on me, on my forearm, I think, that was reading stuff or whatever. I think that was reading, and these were like sending the frequencies back to everything has a frequency. So like, let's say you have Borrelia metamori or whatever, you have, it has a specific frequency, whereas Borrelia burgdorferi has a different frequency. You know what I'm saying? Like everything has a frequency. And so Epstein-Barr has a frequency, or Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever has a frequency, et cetera. So she could see what was coming through. And then I went gluten-free, dairy-free, sugar-free, and just started to do some kill off, but I was so sick. She couldn't do much because I was too sick. You know how, like, when you get kill off and then you have to yeah, because of the Herxheimer reaction, you start to feel sicker from the die off in your bloodstream. It's almost like, you know, like your kill off is almost like pollution. And so you've added pollution to the mix.
That's a great word. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So did she do the treatment just through a frequency, through kind of the machine, or did she do like a homeopathic from?
She did homeopathic, but she also did a lot of supplements.
Okay.
But like, she had me on Desbio Pathogard, and it was too harsh for me. That's monolaurin. I just was so sick. I couldn't take that. And so she would like gear things back until I could like tolerate certain things. And you know, when you first start, you're like, I'm going to push through. I'm going to just kill every last whatever. And you want to do it that way, but you just can't. Your body can only just take so much. And so you have to be wise about it and do a lot of detox. Yeah. So
let me back up for just a second. So
okay.
How long did it take you, how many years, to find this doctor, and what kind of doctor was it?
She's a nurse practitioner.
Oh, I'm sorry. I think you said that. Okay.
Yep. And I was sick for about, I don't know how long I was sick.
Okay. But it was years.
But I got, it was years. And, but then it got to be debilitating for like 4 months.
Okay.
Before I found her, where I really was no longer functional.
Yeah. Right.
So that friend of mine that she was well aware of the state I was in. And so when she overheard this discussion, she sort of interjected herself, like, I have a friend that's really in trouble,
yeah,
you know, and so.
Thank goodness and nobody, for them, and, yeah.
I know. And she said, and seemingly no one can help her.
And so when did you start to kind of throw things in the, that's weird bucket? I mean,
was decades ago, decades ago. Wow. Yeah.
Like 30 or?
I remember the raindrop thing on my arms when my one son Zach was an infant, because I had taken him for a walk in the nighttime to try to deal with crying. And I just said, Dave, I'm going to go walk him and blah, 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 and see if I can get him to sleep. And And he's 30 now.
Wow.
And right. So he's 30 now. And he was just a baby. And I had the raindrops thing going on then.
So 30 years.
Yeah. Okay. It was a clear night. Sad. The stars were out. The moon was out. There wasn't a cloud in the sky and I'm getting rained on. I'm like, okay. What is going on?
Oh, that's me.
Apparently it's coming from inside. I don't know.
So do you remember like being bit by anything or bit? I mean, any kind of event that would have.
You know what? I was bit so much as a kid. We built a cabin in the middle of 70 acres in the woods of Maine. When I was a kid, that's how we spent our summers. We would be in there for a month and we were, you know, covered with bugs and sap and whatever. Mm-hmm. And like, I would have to carry buckets of water from the stream, like for doing the washing the dishes and stuff. And you're getting bit by tiger flies and deer flies and whatever all else, and you didn't want to stop because you would drop your water and you didn't want to go back to the stream, so you just kept going and you just took it, right? And so to this day, if I'm bit by mosquito, I have a bump for like 30 seconds and then it's gone because I have like crazy amounts of antigens for these things.
But did you know
about ticks and about Lyme back then? No idea.
And so, and then when I did find out I had it, I was like, oh, it must've got it back from when I lived in New England, because that's kind of ground zero. But then the more I read, I was like, oh gosh, it's everywhere now. Forget it. I don't know.
Could have been any time. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So she started with these treatments. Did the practitioner you start with, was she the one that finished it as well, or did you have
it was kind of an odyssey. So I kind of got to a point where I plateaued and she couldn't get me any better, and I went on to another naturopath doctor. I think he's the same as you, and he was also using a lot of supplements and liver flushing and all kinds of different things like that. And gosh, I'm trying to remember this one fasting thing I did and cleansing thing. I just, you know, you go through so many things and so he got me again to just so far, and then I plateaued again, and I just wasn't willing to stay there. I wanted to get better. So I found a functional medicine doctor in a major hospital who had worked in New Hampshire when she was a young doctor. And when she was in New Hampshire, Dartmouth Medical Center, by the way, she was told, when people tell you that they have Lyme, you're to treat them like they have Munchausen syndrome, which, by the way, is worse than saying that psychosomatic. It's saying they're making themselves sick. They're drinking something or doing something to make themselves sick.
Really?
And she was like, oh, okay. You know, she was just a young doctor. And then at one point she's like, how can this many people have Munchausen's? You know, that's just not possible. So she started thinking for herself, and she ended up at a different hospital, and then she got recruited to go into this functional medicine area of a major hospital, and was real excited that this major hospital wanted a functional medicine area. So she went, but she still has that mindset. So I got to her and she started to treat me, but she didn't treat me. None of it says it in my chart. I'm being treated no matter what she does. She hangs it on either fibromyalgia or chronic fatigue.
Never mentions Lyme.
No.
Yeah.
So
because she knows how it's perceived.
Yeah, yeah.
She knows it can be the death knell for a doctor. They can lose their license. All kinds of stuff can happen. So she just hangs it on that. And she did a bunch of different things with me, supplement wise. She did the Buhner protocol, which was very, very helpful. And then she did microcurrent therapy, where they would literally put wet towels around my neck and around my feet, and they would clip these wires to the different towels, and they would send microcurrent in that. So remember we talked about how everything has a frequency. Everything has an opposite frequency that kills that frequency. So she was using the opposite frequencies that would kill those frequencies. Cool. See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
So, yeah. So it wasn't electroshock therapy to fix because you were waking up things. No.
But it was just. But it was using my body as the conduit, because the wet towels were around my neck and around my feet, and then the microcurrents going top and bottom, and so it was run my body. The water in my body was the connector, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. They're all those frequencies were trying to get to each other, and so it went through me.
That's really cool. So
yeah.
How did you? I mean, how often did you do that, and how did you kind of how did it impact you when you did it?
I didn't feel anything other than sometimes I would get too cold because the wet towels would cool off, and it would be air conditioned or whatever. So I started bringing a big blanket with me whenever I would go to do these things. It just started to impact some of my symptoms in a positive way. And the only thing that didn't hit was my head. And that was the problem, because I would have these bone crushing headaches with a full moon. And I needed something to handle that. And I don't know if your listeners are aware, but there's a blood brain barrier. So stuff that you take in that's in your bloodstream doesn't get into your head. It just can't get there. There's a barrier. So I needed to find another alternative, and I found another doctor that did a microcurrent that hit your head. And after I did that, I did it for like a week. I went there and I did microcurrent with him like 4 out of 5 days of that week. And I haven't had a headache at a full moon since.
That's awesome.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you were doing the microcurrent with the Buhner protocol, or this was separate? Did they have you on different supplements at the same time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I still take 20 pills a day, but they're not drugs. They're in my mind, I think of them as concentrated food, right? Like they're all health related things. I'm not in kill off anymore, or anything. But yeah, so I mean, there's just a lot of different ways to skin the cat. Like if I start to feel like I'm losing energy again or whatever, I can go for an ozone treatment. Mm-hmm. Ozone treatments, for whatever reason, knock down Epstein-Barr quite nicely. For me anyway. I don't know if that's actually true. Do you know if that's true? I don't know if it's true.
You're talking about the blood ozone, correct?
Yes. Okay. So I would go, they take your blood, they pump it full of ozone, they put it back. Mm-hmm. That's called one pass. And then for me to do it therapeutically, I had to do 10 passes.
10 passes, yeah.
Some people don't have to do that many, and it's best to figure out what's therapeutic for you, because it's you pay per pass. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So
it can get pretty expensive. Like
it can get pretty.
$1,000, you know, for.
So the place I went was, it was in a major hospital. It was a clinic in a major hospital, but they did alternative therapies there. And they had, like, the setup was $200, like all the bottles and the tubes and the this, that, and the other thing that you have to do. And then each single pass was $40. So for 10 passes, it was $600. But if I did one pass, it would be $240. Mm-hmm. See what I mean? Like right. There's that original.
So each person is different. Mm-hmm. So it took you 4 different doctors,
mm-hmm.
and time frame wise, was this over?
Yeah, about a year 4 years.
About four years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
To get you where you are today.
But the thing is, like, all these different things like incrementally got me better. But like at one point, the functional medicine doctor, I started to plateau again. She goes, you know what? I want to check you for one more thing. And she went and she checked for mycotoxins, and I had a ton of them. So she said that I was having this chronic inflammatory response syndrome that we had already seen decades before. And it was from these mycotoxins. In fact, I wrote down the, she said to me, you know, I see people with two or three, maybe that, and you have five that are off the hook. I had aflatoxin, which should be under 0.5. Mine was 1.39. Ochratoxin A should be 7.5. Mine was 16.4. Gliotoxin, this one blew my doors off. It should be under 200. Mine was 2782.05.
You're an achiever. I
know. Mycophenolic acid should be 37.4. Mine was 112.71. And then zearalenin should be under 3.2 and mine was 10.89. So she's like, okay, clearly we have to go after these now. And so she literally like, she pulled back the reins on Lyme and went after the mycotoxins. And
did you check your home for mold as well? Then,
yes. Okay. We had to figure out the source. I mean, yeah, that's a huge amount. And it turned out to be in some sort of dust.
Okay.
And so we had to install this hospital grade thing on our HVAC system. And we had to get this special, you know, mold specialist person, cleaner, whatever. And I do not dust. I just do not dust.
No, exactly. Don't mess with the dust. Leave the dust alone.
Yeah, leave the dust alone.
Dr. K, can you tell the listeners a little bit, what are mycotoxins?
So mycotoxins are produced by the mold. I mean, that they literally produce these chemicals to immobilize your immune system. So the way you have to get rid of that, you know, one, you got to find the source. So how are you being exposed to it? And it can be really extensive ordeal to go through and to find it. And sometimes it can be that you really have to do knock down walls and really kind of do really big thing. I even had patients that sold their home or just left their home and they left everything behind. They all their clothes, their car, their everything, you know, they didn't bring anything over to the new location.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's a big deal.
So it's all mold. So the mycotoxins.
Yeah. The mycotoxins.
Okay.
And you generally go after it with binders, you know, specific binders to bind to the mycotoxins. And when you do that efficiently, then the immune system is not neutralized by the mycotoxins, and then the immune system have a chance to go after them. And
I found interesting, one of the binders she had me doing, I had to eat a tablespoon of almond butter, wait 20 minutes, then take the binder. And she said, I need you to put these mycotoxins on a fat boat. That's what she called it. A fat boat, and send them down the pike. Because she said, what happens is your gallbladder is going to express its stuff to deal with the almond butter. And if you don't get the mycotoxins out of it and send them down the pike, they will just recycle back into your system again. And so there was, you know, twice a day I was doing that too. I mean, there's so many crazy protocols that I went through to do these things.
I've never heard of that one before.
And it's the only way to get them out of there, because the what is that hepatic system, doc, that, you know,
bilary. Yeah. So you,
it recycles, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what happens if you don't bind them, you push it out of the liver, gallbladder, bile duct, and then gets into the intestinal tract. And if you don't bind to it there, then it just get reabsorbed, you know, through the hepatic pathway and goes in and then goes up in the liver again. So it just kind of circles
so
around.
So important to detox.
Well, right. So that's the issue, is that a lot of people, they do their detox, but they don't bind to, they don't kind of grab on to the things that they're detoxifying. So mm-hmm. they take
kind of a magnet inside them.
Yeah, exactly. So they take like a milk thistle or dandelion or whatever it is just to kind of push the liver. And so, yes, it moves out of the liver, but it then goes into the intestinal tract and then it just gets reabsorbed again. So they just right. keep detoxifying the same thing again and again. Yeah. So right. that's why binder becomes so important, and the appropriate right. binder. Yeah. So it's right. not every binder.
I use GI detox a lot. I used ochratoxin, ochropepsin.
Mm-hmm. So you used a lot of standard process and also the biocidin and the GI detox.
Bentonite clay. Yeah, Bentonite clay. Mm-hmm. Yep. I used a lot of those kinds of things. What's that other one? Beginning with a Z, I think.
Zeolite.
Yes. Yeah. Zeolite clay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. So anyway, that was a huge step in my recovery when she figured that out, in addition to everything else. That was probably why I kept plateauing and not getting any right. further, because that was blocking.
Yeah, the majority of Lyme patients, I think, deal with mold.
Yeah.
Mold right. and parasites. So, yeah, those are big.
Yeah. Yeah.
Usually, I mean, the big culprits, you got to make sure you address the mold, got to make sure you address the Bartonella. I mean, those tend to be kind of the big ones that you want to move through, and then you can address all these other things as well.
Right. Interesting.
So how you feel great now, what kind of, can you talk through maybe a couple of supplements that you take to... like my maintenance protocol, I just call it, this is what's going to keep me Lyme free.
Yeah.
So what right. does yours look like? What types of things are you taking to do your maintenance? And do you throw in any modalities or detox regimens on top of it just as maintenance?
I still do Epsom salt and baking soda baths pretty regularly.
Okay.
I was doing infrared sauna religiously for quite some time, and I haven't been doing that lately. It couldn't hurt to throw it back in, actually. It's good for you. Right. But I did it a lot when I was trying to get rid of the mycotoxins. Mm-hmm. I almost daily. Wow. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
I do colloidal silver as a health maintenance mm-hmm. thing. I have some every day. And then my regular supplements, and I stick with my naturopath on a regular basis, because if he picks up anything that's going on, like just by muscle testing, he just sort of tweaks, you know, just little tweaks that have to happen to keep me on the up and up.
But Dr. Karfelt. Sounds he tweaks me all the time.
I know. See, that's what I said. I thought my naturopath was kind of like you. And what else? I stay gluten-free, dairy-free, sugar-free. I eat as much organic as possible. You know, I stick with all those
things that help.
I would call it made like kind of a clean slate that you're working from.
Mm-hmm. And diet is huge.
Yeah, it is huge. It is huge. But generally speaking, I'd say those things are how I'm maintaining. And
those are all good things. Yeah.
Right.
So how long have you been Lyme free?
I don't even call myself Lyme free. I call myself in remission, because I know it's still there.
Right.
I just know my immune system is now handling it again and keeping everything under control. I don't call myself Lyme free, but I'm living in freedom. So I'm freedom from pain, freedom from all those other things that were plaguing me. So you can live in freedom even if you're not completely free of it. Right. Sort of like that book that said, you know, don't kill my Lyme, just make me feel better.
Yeah. No, exactly. Some people say cured, some people say remission. Some people, I'm definitely in remission, but I know what I need to do to stay there. So
right. So we call like, yeah, and And with people dealing with cancer, they say NED, no evidence of disease. So we'll call it NEL, no evidence of Lyme.
Okay. I've never heard
okay.
That.
Yeah. I like that. No evidence of it whatsoever. Yeah. Yeah. And I've been able to get back to, you know, working out and doing stuff like that that I used to enjoy that I couldn't do before. I had a lot of orthopedic surgeries because of Lyme, and in hindsight, I know that's what it was, but I didn't at the time. But like I told you, my back was fused twice. I had my shoulder reconstructed. I had two ankle surgeries. I had two arm surgeries. I mean, just like one after the other, after the other. And amazingly, my knees never got attacked, which is really where it usually strikes. But the degenerative disc disease in my back and my spine was probably that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the Lyme just goes in and it loves the hyaluronic acid in the joint spaces. So they just munch on that, eat that up, and then dry up the bones. And you are having to do surgery.
And that's what happens, you know, because so many people go years, decades without a diagnosis. Right. All the while, the Lyme is just eating away at your body. Right. So
I had to replace my hip. That got completely eaten. It was just gone.
Yeah.
And it made no sense to me. I'm like, what is happening? Right. Yeah. And then, that's what was happening.
So now how do you have anything that you're plagued by that still kind of, that's weird.
No, my that's weird bucket is pretty empty right now.
I love it.
Awesome. Yeah, I know. I love that too. It's pretty awesome. But I always tell people, you know, the best thing you can do in this situation, and I do talk to people that have Lyme on a regular basis. Anybody that knows me knows my journey, and they know if they run into somebody with Lyme, like, you need to talk to my friend, you know?
Yes.
Because I'm more than happy to, because like I said, you know, it could be that one next thing that flips you over into the NEL.
Yeah.
New evidence of Lyme. But there was this little quote that I used to be mindful of when I was really feeling crummy. And it basically was like, kind of like, if you can't clean a whole room, then, you know, clean a corner of it. If you can't wash all the dishes, wash a dish. If you can't take a shower, wash your face, you know, like just keep going and you'll get there. It's just like super duper baby steps at first, and then you'll find yourself striding later. But 1% beats 0%. And
exactly.
You know, I had one of our sons was a sports management major. And he said, you know, when somebody gets hurt, or like if I had an orthopedic surgery or whatever, he'd say, you know, it's fine if you can't do something, just don't do nothing.
Right.
And that makes all the difference in the world, you know? So, okay, you can't do this anymore. Fine. Find something you can do. Or, you know, like I can't snowshoe anymore, but I can hike, you know? And so I bought these spiky things for my shoes, because the hip is weird. Like, it doesn't exactly work like a normal hip. Oh. And so I found the snowshoes were dragging on it weird, and I didn't like how it felt at all. And I heard a click, and I was like, I'm not doing this.
Yeah.
especially when you hear a click inside your own body, you're like, oh.
Right. That's not supposed to happen, right?
No.
But I do. I always tell Lyme people that there's always something that you can do. You know,
right.
I used to just be grateful that I was able to walk out my patio door and sit and look at the stars one night. Or there's something you can do every single day.
Right.
So, and like you said, 1% is better than zero.
Right.
So that's a great tip for the listeners.
Yeah. So,
it's been awesome. This has been fun. Thank you so much.
This has been fun for
sharing your journey, and I'm so excited that you are where you're at, and for all the blessings that you give and to you know those little ones of yours that are not so little anymore.
No, they're all grown up. Yeah. We've got 12 grandkids already. Can you believe that?
Oh my goodness.
I know.
Busy ones.
Yeah, you definitely don't have time for Lime.
Nobody got time for this.
Yeah. Well, Tricia, thank you so much. Your journey's been very
welcome.
Insightful.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Well, have a beautiful rest of the evening. Enjoy.
Thank you too. Thank you. Bye. Good night.
The information in this podcast is for educational purposes only and is not designed to diagnose or treat any disease. I hope this podcast impacted you as it did me. Please subscribe so that you can be notified when new episodes are released. There are some excellent shows coming up that you do not want to miss. If you're enjoying these podcasts, please take a moment to write a review and please don't keep this information to yourself. Share them with your family and friends. You never know what piece of information that will transform their lives. For past episodes and powerful information on how to conquer Lyme, go to integrativelymesolutions.com and an additional powerful resource, limestream.com. For Lyme support and group discussions, join Tanya on Facebook at Lyme Conquerors Mentoring Lyme Warriors. If you'd like to know more about the cutting-edge integrative Lyme therapies my center offers, please visit thecarlfeldcenter.com. Thank you for spending this time with us, and I hope to see you at our next episode of Integrative Lyme Solutions with Dr. Carlfeld.